What's the longest you think you've ever worked on a single bug, Sean?
30 years. That's how old I am.
It's good.
Several days. I don't know. I think, obviously, I know what you're talking about, and I don't think that I've ever, or I know what you're going to be talking about shortly. I don't think I've ever had to spend that long on something, especially in terms of not fixing, but debugging that whole period of time. I've certainly never had to do anything more than even a day, maybe like a full day.
Yeah, that's, I would say that's about the same for me. And I've been doing this for a while, many, many years at this point. And it's generally like a day, maybe a day and a half to like fully get a fix implemented and in production or something like that, right? Generally.
Right. Usually if I'm,
for a pretty bad bug.
Yeah, usually if I'm being stubborn, it only takes a day because I'm not taking a break. Usually as soon as I take a break, I come back and it gets fixed.
Yep. Yeah, and that's been the experience for me with every single bug I think I've ever dealt with, ever. No matter how big, or like how much stuff it touched or how complex it was or whatever, it was always like, oh, it'll probably be about a day, or I'm going to go to bed and wake up in the morning and I'll already have the fix in mind, fix it and deploy it, and then we're done, right? I've been working on this one since Wednesday afternoon. It's been like, what, five days now?
Right.
Five days? It's been a long time, Sean, and I'm talking like wake up, work on it until I pass out, wake up hoping to have the solution but have nothing.
That's some perseverance.
Over and over.
I would have quit.
Well, and I think what it got me thinking most is just about like new devs and how common it is to run into things like this. And man, as somebody who's been doing this for years and years and years, and I know I'm okay at my job. Like I understand that. I've been doing this long enough to have that confidence, at least some level, some of the time. But man, it is still a real recipe for some imposter syndrome.
Yeah. I think about that a lot too. Just I guess to frame the problem that you're having, a lot of it stems from package version mismatching, right?
A big portion of it. So the root cause of this is actually that I'm upgrading NestNotes to the release candidate version of Nuxt, because for some technical reasons with Apple and their requirements, and a unfortunate bug in WK WebView that has existed for years and just been unaddressed with cookie storage and iframes. Anyhow, a bunch of technical details have led me to having to upgrade NestNotes sooner than I would have liked to the release candidate of Nuxt. I was previously on the 0.10 branch, and it had been great, and it was working fine. But again, because of Apple stuff and the App Store review process, I'm having to do this big upgrade. And it's like complete, but basically I'm stuck in dev mode. So of course I opened a GitHub issue and got a bunch of comments and back and forth with people, and spent a day debugging it that way. And I had already spent a day like just looking at it on my own, trying to figure out. And it eventually all came down to package mismatch stuff, or like Heroku having a different version of NPM because that wasn't locked in correctly or something. It's all these crazy things, but it's just one thing after another where it's like not a fix, but like you find it and it's like, oh, I found the thing, but it's actually just another symptom of the thing and not the actual cause. It's not the actual disease.
Right. Yeah. That's always the worst. And that's kind of, so when I started moving Knight Foundation over to Nuxt, Knight was originally written in Vue version 1, Vue Router 1 and all that stuff.
Oh, man.
And of course there've been major version updates and things like that. And I want to upgrade to Vue 2 because I think there are a lot of benefits to upgrading. A lot of API changes that I like. Really not that many API changes, but maybe API changes that I like a lot. And that was always fun. So I would copy a component over, paste it, save, and just see what would happen and start fixing things from there. And one thing I noticed was very strange was that, so also Knight version 1 was written in CoffeeScript. And I noticed that when I started bringing files over, even though I had CoffeeLoader pulled in, which means that WebKit will it'll compile the CoffeeScript for me into JavaScript, I noticed that I was getting these weird template render errors. And I ended up tracking that down to the require statements because CoffeeScript doesn't have import star from whatever or import module name from module, right? It doesn't have any of that stuff. So I realized that, okay, well, I'm either going to have to figure out how to fix this myself, look for some sort of transform that goes in between, or just convert it to ES6. So I decided to just convert it to ES6.
Yeah, and that's basically the same issue. You were just helping me debug the thing I've been working on for this whole week, and that's basically what we landed on as hopefully the final thing that has to be fixed for all this to be fixed. But now I'm looking at my components folder, and it's like at least 100 files in here.
Yeah.
So that's got a big job I got ahead of me later tonight.
Yeah.
But I think this has kind of made me realize, unfortunately, that I'm also going to have to, in addition to upgrading NestNotes sooner than I wanted to the full release of Nuxt, I think I'm also going to have to move it away from CoffeeScript or Start. I think we are at that point, finally.
At that
Sean.
Point, we've been talking about this for yeah. since we both worked at Octopus. Okay, so previously there had been a project called JS2 Coffee. So you can convert CoffeeScript and JavaScript back and forth. And that was fine, but specifically I needed to convert my stuff to ES6. And I found a project called Decaffeinate. I remember seeing it on Twitter way back when, and they have a REPL. So what I've been doing, this is so tedious, what I've been doing is taking a component, I'll copy the CoffeeScript out, paste it into the REPL, copy the ES6 out, paste it into my component, and save. And then I'll go about
right.
And import.
But you said that doesn't actually convert it from required import statements.
Correct.
So you still actually have to manually do that.
I still have to do that. So
then that's what I've got in my future, I believe.
Yeah. So
it's going to be a fun time.
Yeah. As long as you know your Sublime keyboard shortcuts, Command Shift L or whatever it is to convert to lines, you'll be all right. Yeah. But that was Alejandro. I'm sorry. I lied to you when I told you it would be done sooner. But this is why. because I'm having to convert all this stuff and it's pretty tedious. And then obviously I have to do, there's a few different steps, right? I have to convert it from CoffeeScript to ES6, and then I have to convert it from Vue 1 to Vue 2. And then I have to work out the SSR stuff. So if there's any part of the component that relies on window, and incidentally with Knight, there's a bunch because of all the different content blocks and like unfurling components and things like that. So there's like, it's like a 3-step process to convert the start component into what it needs to be. And granted, the code for Knight version 2 is a lot cleaner, a lot easier to follow, so much more organized. It's going to be a better site. The process has sucked.
Yeah. It's so interesting. We keep running into these issues or just things where we end up working on the same problems in totally different, not always like, oh, we're working on the same Webpack problem or whatever, but it's like, oh, we're working on a similar SQL problem, or we're working on a similar like database mm-hmm. architecture problem, or we're working on a Webpack problem or a Nuxt problem. And we always seem to hit them like a few days apart from each other. It's kind of hilarious.
Well, it's also funny because when you hit something, you'll ask me about it and the knowledge will be up there. It just doesn't come to the surface until you give me something very specific. So you'll spend like 4 hours and then I'll be like, oh yeah, by the way, 4 hours later, something that would have helped you. A long time ago.
It's,
I don't know.
It's hilarious. I think it's really interesting that we're both moving away from coffee right now, because I mean, at least for me, it's pretty bittersweet because I can see that it's clearly time. The community is moving on and the tooling is just starting to break when you try to use coffee. It's getting to a point where it's causing more problems than it's fixing. But man, I still really love it. I love the syntax. I love the idea, or at least a lot of the syntax. I know there are some problems. And there are some things from ES6 I would really like to see in CoffeeScript, but man, I really wish that I'm always going to wish that JS had gone a little bit more in the coffee direction.
Same. I still like really enjoy writing CoffeeScript. I just haven't for a while. And what's funny is that as I'm compiling stuff from coffee to JavaScript, the line lengths double just because it's so much more verbose. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just, I don't know. So I felt like when I looked at CoffeeScript from a distance, like when I first opened the file, I was able to parse things so much easier because there's so much less noise. You know, there's no semicolons. There's no, well, I don't use semicolons anyway. DM me if you have a problem with that. There's no brackets or anything like that. You don't need them. So I guess I'm just now used to things being verbose because Design Collective is ES6 now. Watch Nature is ES6. Knife Foundation is ES6. So just used to it. But I've also noticed some other people, maybe the most prominent example, Johnny from Cushion App, they're also moving away from CoffeeScript ES6. And he's always tweeting about things that he misses. So, for example, he was just tweeting about the safe navigation operator. So you stop a question mark as you're traversing an object, just like Ruby has now. He was like, my kingdom for this. I really wish this existed.
It's incredible. Stuff like that and array comprehensions. The question mark operator, the I think they call it the existential operator. It's amazing. So instead of having to do stuff in JavaScript, which you'll see in JS codebases, even modern JS codebases, if type of something triple equals function, then call it as a function. Right. Whereas if in CoffeeScript, you can just do something question mark parentheses, and it writes out that code for you. But that's a really common thing to have to do. You just want to check if there's a thing inside of another thing or if a thing is a function.
Yeah.
And there's just not a great way to do some really simple kind of everyday things like that in JavaScript, which results in this really... I don't mind code that is verbose when there's a reason to be, but I just don't, a lot of that stuff, why isn't that solved?
Yeah.
It's just kind of weird.
Yeah. The more that I use Elixir and pattern matching specifically, I wish that every language that I worked with had pattern matching, because then you essentially wouldn't need to do all that stuff. You wouldn't need to, if type of, it was function or whatever, you just wouldn't need it. You would just match off of the arguments that it's given.
Yeah. I'm getting pretty jealous of some of those pattern matching examples you've been sending through, man. That's some cool
just
stuff.
Just between pattern matching and function overloading function names. So just defining the same name twice, but giving it different arguments. I mean, obviously that's just really how pattern matching works. So you define get thing twice, and then you define which arguments that it takes, and whatever you actually call and send arguments, it'll call the correct function for you. That alone has simplified my code. Like I hardly ever use, I guess if I do use a conditional, it's a case or something like that.
And you probably think twice about it too.
Yeah, usually when I'm using cases, it's because there are specific cases that I want to handle. I'm not actually checking to see if something is something, if that makes sense. I'm not checking for values. I'm checking, is this a struct or is it an error? Change set.
Sure.
Something like that, which seems fine, but I don't even think I've written a single if else. I am fairly certain that there's not a single if else condition in DK.
That's pretty awesome.
Too. But yeah, I really wish, and I think we talked about this at one point in a previous show, someone had made a proposal to add the pipeline operator to JavaScript because that would make functional programming much more accessible to people. But I would just cry for a whole day if JavaScript added pipelines and pattern matching. That would be, I don't know, I feel like that would be a perfect world as a front-end developer.
Yeah, I saw the pipe stuff too, and that would be really nice. It's kind of one of those things where until you're using it a little bit, I feel like it doesn't really sink in how helpful that sort of thing can be. I mean, even just like in bash scripts, just piping stuff around, just play with that for a little bit and then imagining it in a full like programming language that you're building out an app in.
It's
pretty amazing.
That's why I always encourage people to just check out different languages. Like I'm always harping on Kevin because he's productive with PHP. He likes PHP. I'm like, man, you should check out Elixir. You should check out Go. You should check out Vue. You should check out this and that because you don't really know what you're missing, or you don't really know what you could learn and take back to whatever language you're using. And he did text me a couple weeks ago and say that he did actually end up trying out Vue and he really enjoyed it. But before that, he was always like, this sounds great, but I don't really know why I need it, if that makes sense.
I think people ask that a lot. And I think a lot of times the answer is, well, you're not going to know until you try it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it can be really hard to explain like what's cool about working with a piece of tech, like a language or a framework or whatever that is, until the person is actually using it, at least in my experience, because I often get a different thing out of using a language or a framework than somebody else might. Like there are so many different advantages and disadvantages and reasons why somebody might be attracted to a given tool set that I think it's almost kind of, it can be dangerous to just blindly listen to people when they say, oh, you should try this out because I think it's great. Yeah. You need to look at yourself and your own requirements and what you're trying to build and what you're trying to achieve, and then play with the thing in that light,
right,
to really get a sense of whether it's going to work for you.
Some of it too is also almost generational in a sense. So I've been, I don't know, how long have I been? I think I started freelancing in like 2009. And back then we didn't have React, we didn't have Vue, we didn't have that whole paradigm. You kind of did everything yourself. You just managed a DOM and typically it was with jQuery. And then
we had jQuery 1.3.
Mm-hmm. And then Backbone came around and that was cool. But like a lot of the people that are asking the questions like, well, that's cool, but I don't know why I would need to use React or why I would need to use Vue. because they never had, they haven't been around long enough. They never had to solve those problems without that tool. So the example that I gave Kevin, I was like, well, have you ever tried to build a calendar that updates in real time with jQuery? And he would say no, because he hasn't had to do that. Well, I did once, and now I know, like I did it once and then I did it again with Vue, and it like Vue changed my life. You know, have you ever had to like build a real, not real time in the sense that you're getting, it's like sockets and stuff, but real time in the sense that when you change, when you add a product to your cart, the UI updates itself. Have you ever had to build a pretty complicated UI that does all that, that stuff as the user is making these actions happen? And a lot of people haven't been around long enough to actually do that. Or maybe they haven't had to do anything super complicated like that without a tool like Vue. And that, to me, that's where a lot of that seems to be coming from, is that, you know, I don't know what it was like before, so I don't really know what problem this solves for me.
Yeah, I've also seen some pushback against single page apps lately. And I mean, of course, always, forever, there's pushback against single page apps from somebody.
Sure.
But almost like a renewed sort of thinking on it, just as I assume, just as more people are getting exposed to the idea and having to work with legacy single page app code bases and stuff, right? There's going to be a bit more pushback again. But a lot of these arguments that I'm seeing are like, oh, it messes with the URLs and you can't permalink to things. And arguments against single page apps in 2012, not in 2017. And so I think there's probably a pretty good subset of people who have been exposed to single page apps, but like really bad ones, really poorly made ones, or at least poorly maintained ones. And they probably have a bad taste in their mouth of the whole idea now. Although I guess I'm also saying this as someone who literally just said I spent 5 days on this bug.
Sure.
But that is due to my own. I mean, that is not really a Nuxt thing. It is something that's happened to me while working with Nuxt, but it's been, that's my own legacy project crap causing it, really.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, and you know what? I don't know if we talked about this either, but I think it was maybe last week I sent you a message. Like, we went from server-rendered apps to spas back to server-rendered apps. And a lot of people kind of say like, oh, didn't we just go full circle? Aren't we back to where we started? But they're so different. They're such different things. And a lot, I mean, like you said, I think you sent me that article with, or what, did I send it to you? I don't remember. The guy that was complaining about like permalinks being broken and URLs being broken.
I sent that to you, yeah.
I was like, well, that's not really an issue anymore. But when you look at like a modern server rendered, take for example, Knight version 2, okay? So obviously what happens is, okay, so obviously the project is split into two parts. So you have the front end, which is the client, and then you have the back end, which is the API. Now, traditional server rendered applications, there's a lot of weird crossover between, so if those were the same thing, but the server, like say the API is built in Rails, so like Rails would be rendering half of the page, and then as soon as that boots up, you have a bunch of JavaScript that gets data and then renders the other half of the page. There's a lot of problems that occur in between that coupling there, and it's kind of difficult to work around. So what people did is they separated them and made completely SPA applications. You know, so the user goes to the browser, has to load and parse all the JavaScript runs, gets the data, renders the page, and returns it, right? So you have that whole kind of cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And that was also fine, but there were also a lot of issues, like for example, pre-rendering services like pre-rendered IO arose because of that, because for a while search engines didn't render JavaScript pages, for example. And that's not so much of a problem anymore, but there's still problems where, you know, if someone doesn't have the JavaScript cache, they have to load all the JavaScript they asked to parse, and then the JavaScript has to get the data and then render the page before the user sees anything. And that's mostly fine on people's computers, but on phones, on tablets, in third world countries or places where the connection's not great over cellular data, it's not a great experience, right?
Households with Comcast.
My apartment. So now, you know, now we arrive at a server rendered SPA, which sounds like a lot of people say it's overcomplicated. Why do you need all this stuff? Why can't you just go to where we started, you know, server rendered applications by the actual data side of things, or the data side of the server. But the applications we're building these days are so much more complicated, right? And I was saying to you that the workflow is amazing. So we still get that decoupling, right? I can make changes to the API independent of making changes to the client, you know, which is great, because then changes are focused. If I change an API, I know I didn't break anything weird with the client unless I broke the API, right? Mm-hmm. So that decoupling is still great. And then you can still use the same API for multiple front ends for iOS apps that, you know, might consume the same API as your front end application. But with the SSR portion, you still get the benefit of the browser gets a chunk of HTML and assets like it normally would, you know? So then SEO becomes a non-issue. You know, people that still want to harp on that. Then waiting, like a client waiting for the device to get, parse, and run all the JavaScript becomes a non-issue, right? So it's kind of like the best.
A reduced issue. I would say a non-issue.
A reduced issue. So you kind of get the best of both worlds there. And then once more, frameworks like Nux do a ton of heavy lifting for you in terms of like chunking your bundles. So that way you can have a vendor bundle that's cached heavier than your app bundle, right? So basically a lot of that stuff is done for you and you don't have to worry about it. So for me, I'm very much more productive building this SPA SSR combo than I would be either in point A where the two are joined and the actual API server is doing the page rendering, or B if it's just a SPA on its own.
Right. And I mean, I've felt that benefit even during this really horrible debugging experience that I'm still dealing with, right? Because if this were a single integrated monolithic app that was using client side and server side stuff, I would just have even more to look at. I'd be like, well, is this some weird issue with something in Ruby in production? Or is this being caused by, it would just make it so many more things that could be wrong. Instead of a needle in 50 haystacks, it would be like a needle in 100
right,
haystacks.
Yeah.
It's already this ridiculous task. And so in this case, even though I'm dealing with a really terrible bug, having it completely separate from my API and not having to even think about that allows me to build out better reduced test cases so I can troubleshoot, and it just makes the whole thing a smaller problem space to think about.
Yeah.
So I think there are a ton of benefits to doing the SSR stuff.
Yeah, there are. I've been really enjoying it. I know that spectrum.chat is also now SSR, and I noticed a big improvement in speed up front. So that's pretty cool. So there's a lot to be said around that. And there's still a lot of complexities around it as well. But I think that I'm looking at my workflow right now, I'm happier today than I ever have been. And yeah, things are way more complicated. There are way more moving parts to it, but it feels good and I feel productive. And I feel like the end result is a better product.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I would just encourage folks who have maybe been thinking about looking at SSR stuff, but they're like, oh, I don't know if this is for me. I would say give it a try and see if it is for you. Like, because that's kind of the only way to really figure that out. And if you've been exposed to like a really terribly maintained single page app in the past and been kind of burned with that, you should look at some of the modern tools out there, like Next and Nuxt for React and Vue. I think the ecosystem has just gotten to a point where there's some really, really cool stuff that can be done, and it's pretty clean too now.
Yeah, it's super clean. And like we were talking about, Night version 1 was a custom SPA, and Night version 2 is a Nuxt app, and the Nuxt is so much cleaner, Paul. It's so much more organized. It's so much easier to reason about. It's just hands down, it's just a better product.
Boop, boop, boop.